Welcome, everyone. This is the Social Media Marketing for Therapists call. This is Juliet Austin, and we're so glad that you joined us here today. We have over 600 people that signed up for the call, which really shows, I think, the interest and the importance of this call, and also I think it's an indication of how much confusion and interest and overwhelm and all of those things that people are experiencing. So we're really glad you're here. And let me just give you a little bit of overview of what's going to be happening today. Basically, we're going to be giving you kind of an overview of why you need to be on social media, lots of concerns that people have about privacy and how you can address some of those issues. We're also going to talk a bit about ethics. And we're finally going to talk about, you know, how to manage overwhelm and how to deal with time management issues. This is a beginning of what Susan and I are going to be doing here together. We're going to be starting a six-week course on January 11th, and we're going to be telling you more about that. It's actually posted. The information is posted at socialmediafortherapists.com right now. And we do have an early bird deadline for that, which is this coming Sunday. So we'll be telling you more about that. But first, let me introduce a little bit about myself, and then I'll let Susan say a bit more about herself. Those of you, I know there's a lot of you on the call that do know me. I'm a former psychotherapist, and I've been working with therapists and healing practitioners, helping them build successful practices, and all particularly my subspecialty is around what I call client attracting websites and helping people do that with client attracting copy. So I've been doing that for 11 years now. And so I've kind of, you know, watched this whole, you know, issue of therapists trying to learn how to build their practice and getting online and struggles with technology and struggles around marketing. And I see this whole new area of social media as just the next level that therapists need to kind of get a handle on. And I'll be talking a bit more about that later. I'm really glad to be here with my partner, Susan. Susan, I'm so sorry, but I never can pronounce your name correctly. I should have got
Gurleo.
That. Gurleo.
Gurleo.
Gurleo, sorry.
Yes. That's okay.
Susan, and one of the cool things about meeting Susan is we met on Twitter. So, and this is just, I think we're an example of what can be done on Twitter and what kind of cool people you can meet there. And I'm really excited to be partnering with Susan around this. And those of you that don't know her, you're going to be really, I think, excited to learn about her and see all the great stuff that she has to offer. Susan, you want to just introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, thank you, Juliet. That was very kind, and I am just as thrilled to be working with you as well. So I am a practicing psychologist in Massachusetts, USA, and I actually started my journey in building my practice primarily online and using social media about 7 years ago when my son was born. And I really didn't have the time or the energy to sort of go traditional routes in terms of marketing because I was balancing being home with my son and then seeing clients and then trying to build a practice all at the same time. So I took it upon myself to figure out this new world of online marketing. And what I found was once I figured out sort of all of the pieces and put them into a coherent whole, that it was a really effective, low-cost way to market a practice, and it allowed me to attract really my ideal clients, people that were looking for my specific services, and it gave those people a real chance to sort of see who I was before they even picked up the phone to make an appointment. So the great thing about using online forums and social media is that people, by the time they reach you voice to voice, they know who you are and what you do pretty well. So they are often ready to start working with you, and it eliminates a lot of the questions that get in the way sometimes around how, you know, how much your services cost and how they're going to pay you, et cetera. So I've really grown a practice from the ground up. And one of the things that did happen to me when I started using social media was that I went from a small practice of having, you know, maybe two or three clients to a practice where I was seeing 25 clients a week with an 8-week wait list. So that's really the sort of the power and the potential in using social media and online work. So I'm excited today to, with Juliet, to share with you how you can start using social media to your advantage as well.
Thanks, Susan. I should just say that, you know, if you want to find out more about Susan, you can go to bizsavvytherapist.com. That's Susan's main website, and mine is julietaustin.com. And I should say, while Susan's in Boston, I'm over on the other coast in Vancouver up in Canada. So you have the two coasts of the continent represented here. Okay, let's get started then. I'm going to first talk about why use social media and should you even use it. Well, I think the short answer is yes, and Susan and I are both in agreement about that, which is why we have this call, why we're having this call today. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the benefits you get about having you get about having both of us on this call is we both have had different experiences and perhaps a slightly different perspectives just because of that. I think we agree on that we should be using social media, but because of our experiences around that, we might look at it a little bit differently. So, you know, one of the things that I always go back to, and many of you probably have heard me say this on other calls, or some of you I know are my former clients, is that when I first started in 1999 helping therapists, therapists didn't know much about marketing at all, or even know that there was resources out there to help, or even that they should be, there was things to learn. I mean, they just thought maybe they put up some brochures or sent some brochures to doctors, and then they didn't get response and wondered why. And then a lot of them, I think, determined, oh, well, I guess it's really difficult to build a practice, so, you know, maybe I shouldn't do that, or maybe I just need to continue struggling. And then came, you know, the whole notion of websites. And therapists used to ask me, should I have a website? And they would say, well, do I really need one? Do I really have, is it really essential to build a practice? And, you know, so here we are, you know, 11 years later, and therapists are saying, should I be using social media? And I really think, you know, do you have to use social media? I would say, no, you don't have to yet today. But if you look at what's happened with websites, most therapists would and healing professionals would realize that nowadays you have to have a therapist. People go online to look for information. They do that before they go to a phone book. They, you know, they use the internet. I have, I was telling Susan the other day, I still get people that have been in practice for 20 or 30 years and built their practice, you know, way back then, didn't do any marketing for years or limited marketing, and maybe got a really strong word of mouth following. And now they're coming to me because they're noticing their numbers are dropping. They've not kept up. Some of them have websites, but maybe they're too basic. And some of them haven't even had a website. And now they're realizing and panicking that they're behind and they need to get caught up. So one of the reasons that I think it's important to get on social media is that you don't want to be left behind. You never want to be the last person to do anything. There are many, many therapists. I don't know the numbers right now, but I see them on Twitter and on Facebook, and they are marketing. They are using the tool effectively, and they are getting clients. Susan is not the only person who's done that. I know many that have done that. So why wouldn't you want to be there with those other people? Why would you want to be left behind? Now, if you've already got a strong practice and you've got other marketing strategies in place and you just don't feel like you want to do that at this point in time, I would say that's fine, but I think you need to learn about it and you need to get onto it probably sooner than later because we never know what's going to be happening in the future. More and more people are online. You know, Facebook has over 500 million people on there. People are building relationships with other therapists through reading their information. And as Susan was just saying, that once you get known in the social media milieu, I mean, people want a therapist. Who are they going to go to? They're going to go to those people that they already know, like, and trust. Social media is about building relationships, and I know that there's some people on this call, quite a few of you, because I've been getting emails about this, who are using social media, but they're not seeing the results, and they don't have a strategy around it. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that today and more in our six-week program that's coming up. Susan, do you want to just add something to that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons, you know, there's actually a lot of research out there about how people are using the internet to find healthcare information. And so these are statistics for the U.S. I know we have people from all over the world on this call, but the Pew Internet Research for American Family Life did a study last year and found that over 62% of Americans search online for healthcare information, and over 35% of them are looking specifically for mental health information. So they're specifically typing in search terms like anxiety or depression or PTSD. But 62% of a population as big as the United States using the internet to look for healthcare information. I mean, if you're want to attract clients, it makes a whole lot of sense if basically two-thirds of everyone is online looking for you. And if you're not there, like Juliet said, you're at risk of sort of being left behind and just not known. I mean, you could be the best practitioner in your city, but if nobody can find you because you're not where they are, and most people are online nowadays, if you're not where they hang out, they won't even know of your existence. So I think, you know, that's really important to know. If you're thinking to grow, you need to be where the people are.
I was just thinking, too, I mean, if you want to be relevant, I mean, I did a teleseminar that I know some of you were on a few months ago called Don't Be a Dinosaur.
I love that title.
and you know, I think that, you know, I know that therapists tend to be what we call in the marketing terms late adopters, which means that they're kind of the last people they're one of the groups that are kind of last to adopt to technology. There's a lot of fears and overwhelm about it. And, you know, there is a lot to learn, and I think the thing is you just have to take it one step at a time. But you really don't want to be seen as someone who's not up to date. That's not going to, you know, help your credibility. And I know those of you that are kind of more of my generation in their 40s and 50s, you know, we were around long before the internet, but the younger generations, you know, they're using these tools. This is normal for them. And if you want to be attracting those clients as well and be seen as up to date and relevant and someone who knows what's happening, then, you know, you'll want to be, you know, having your presence online and your website or your blog, et cetera, all geared and set up and in alignment with that. And as you notice now, like Facebook is, for example, is kind of taking over the web slowly, you know, where you have the like buttons everywhere on people's website and all of that. So, you know, it's a real, the web is turning into what they call the social web, you know, which is the second wave, you know, sometimes referred to as Web 2.0, which is the social web, which is really about interacting, as opposed to the first wave of the internet, which was about static websites that you just posted up there like a bulletin board and people would go there and find out information about you. And it's really, really changing really quickly into this, more and more into the social interactive web.
Absolutely.
Susan, do you have anything else to say, or do you want to talk a little bit about ethics?
Yeah, why don't we move on to ethics, because I know this is the area that a lot of therapists, and rightly so, get concerned and a little bit confused, because when we talk about building relationships, for many of us in our work, building relationships means building up a certain level of professional intimacy with people. And so I think we worry as psychotherapists, that if we go online and we start interacting with people, like Juliet just mentioned, if we start building relationships online, that boundaries are going to get crossed in a couple ways. One, boundaries with clients sort of using the social media space to share maybe some of their confidential information that we know, you know, is concerning, that they would be sharing that in a public forum. And also concerns that, you know, our personal information that we may have on our social media sites might be seen by potential clients or current clients. So those are all legitimate concerns and worries, but there are definitely things that we can do to address the potential issues around ethics. The first thing that, you know, I really tell all therapists who are starting to use the online space is that you have to keep your professional hat on when you're in the online space. Basically, you need to be comporting yourself in a way that you would either in your office, in the community, you know, having conversations with people that are professional, that have good boundaries, and to have a plan if a client or potential client crosses those boundaries. I have to say, in 6 or 7 years of using social media to market a practice, I have never had anyone inappropriately cross boundaries in the social media space. Because again, as Juliet said, there's a big, big, big group of people out there who use social media and the internet in their daily life. And they really do know the difference between a conversation you would have face-to-face in a therapist or a doctor's office versus a conversation that they would have in public, in a public forum, which would, again, be the social media space. And I think sometimes the consumer or the client or the customer, however you want to call them, is more savvy than we are as therapists. So, again, I've never had anybody breach the social media space in terms of boundaries or their own confidentiality in 7 years. However, that said, there may be some people who don't understand the boundaries, and really the best way to address that is to have a plan in place where if someone contacts you via email or a blog post or whatever, and you feel like you know, that's a conversation that should be happening offline, it's as simple as contacting them and saying, please give me a call, and giving them your office number, and they can call you and you take it offline. Also, anything that's posted in the online social media space can be deleted. So a comment on a Facebook wall or a tweet or, you know, something on your blog, all of that can be deleted. So it's not like there's this permanent mark out there that everyone is going to be able to see. So that is something just to keep in mind, that you do have control of your social media space. It's not kind of this out there sort of, you know, you have no ability to kind of control what comes in and out of your social media sites. You do. You do have control over that. Facebook does have privacy settings. I would say, however, that they're not foolproof, which is why I really encourage people to have a business page on Facebook and not use their personal page for any interaction with the public. Then you can close up your personal page and make that sort of only available to people that know you well. And then your professional or business page can be liked by as many people as want to. Some people have expressed concern that if clients of theirs like their professional page, they've in some way breached their confidentiality because they've now acknowledged publicly that they like you. You know, there's some debate in therapist circles about that. I think I have more people that like my page and things than are clients, because they can like me from all over the world. So someone over in the Philippines, for instance, who I've heard from about my site, will not be a client, but they still have the potential to like me. So that's something that, you know, Julie and I will talk more about in the course, which if you're interested in learning more about that right now, I just want to let you know there's information up at socialmediaforththerapists.com right now. We'll talk more detail about that. I also have another sort of piece that I tell people when they're starting to use the social media spaces, and I call it the coffee shop test. And the coffee shop test is I want to put only out in social media anything that I would talk to a colleague about in a coffee shop. So, you know, if you've networked or met with colleagues and you've gone out for coffee, certainly you're not sitting in there using, talking about clients, talking about cases, using people's names. You know, we all have been trained not to do that. That's the same thing for what you would talk about or engage with in social media. I have seen, unfortunately, people come into Twitter, for instance, and tweet things like, my next client is late, or I have a client coming, she's a 30-year-old woman with an eating disorder. That is inappropriate use of social media because it could violate somebody's confidentiality. However, if you never mention a client's name, if you never mention a client's issue, then you have no chance of ever violating anyone's confidentiality. So again, I call it the coffee shop test. If you wouldn't have that conversation in a coffee shop, then it shouldn't ever happen in social media. Anything I'm leaving out, Juliet?
I was just thinking about what you were talking about, liking the Facebook pages. Now, I realize there's people on this call that might not know the difference between your regular profile on Facebook and pages, and we will be talking about that more on the course, so bear with us if it's a little confusing. Facebook can be confusing because it's very complicated. You were talking about potential client or clients actually liking your Facebook page, and I'm just wondering if I understood you correctly, but really, I mean, when you have lots of people liking your page, nobody's going to know who your clients are and who aren't, right?
Yeah, they have no way of identifying if they're a client or not.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, Susan, you said this to me before, which I really think is valuable. I mean, yes, we have to, you know, watch ethics and everything, but we also have to acknowledge that times are changing. And like you said earlier, people are online, so it really behooves us as therapists and other practitioners to find ways to manage our ethical boundaries and client confidentiality while still using the tools that our potential clients are using and want to see us in those spheres as well.
Right. And another thing that is really important for all of us to think about and talk about is really who ultimately owns confidentiality. So I think that's a really important piece for us all to consider because in the end of the day, the client owns their confidentiality. I mean, we just have to protect it on their behalf. So somebody, and there's many, many communities online right now of people who self-identify as people who are clients or patients around a certain issue. So I know that there's, for instance, there's a chat on Twitter for women with postpartum depression. It's called PPD chat. Or there's another woman on Twitter I know who tweets all the time about her treatment of lupus, and so she talks about that. So these communities want to form in the online space. They're not ashamed of the things that they are struggling with, and they want to talk to one another. And they're also looking for people who are experts in that area to come in and talk with them. So these people are often referred to as e-patients. And they are not ashamed to identify as having depression or anxiety, and that's what they use social media to do, is to join with others who are working through the same issues.
And they may even be mentioning the names of their therapists.
Absolutely, their doctors and their therapists. Yes,
exactly. I was going to say something, but it slipped my mind. Do you have anything else you want to say about ethics? Oh, I know I was going to ask you, Susan. You have a social media policy for your clients?
What I do with my clients is I have an email policy, so I do let people decide if they want to use email to communicate with me or not. Typically, I actually don't use Facebook anymore for my practice because I'm not actually marketing it right now actively. But when I did, I let people know about the issues of confidentiality. So since, for instance, saying that if you like my page, people will now know that you like learning about ADHD and autism, and that may have something to do, you know, something around your confidentiality. My policy is with Twitter that I let anyone who wants to follow me, but it doesn't mean I'll follow them back. And with Facebook, I only allow the public to like my professional pages, not my personal.
You don't become friends with them, in other words.
I do not friend anyone who's not a friend.
a personal friend.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Okay, well, that's great. Should I mention that a little bit about privacy, which kind of fits in a lot with ethics, of course. And I guess the main thing that I want to say about privacy is that I know there's all kinds of stuff that people hear in the media about Facebook breaching privacy, and there's been a lot of mistakes that Facebook has made, which they quickly, in most cases, corrected. And I think what happens is I hear people say, well, I don't want to use Facebook because I'm scared of my privacy. And then if I ask them, what are they afraid of? They don't really know. They've just heard something out there, either in the media or somebody told them something, and so they're afraid because of that. So I think that, you know, again, it's like you need to be informed, and if you decide not to use it, that's your choice, but I think you should really know about what you're deciding and why you're deciding it. And I believe strongly in that about any issue. Like, you know, first of all, know what it's about. If you choose not to do it, know what the implications are of using it or not using it. So in terms of privacy, the most important thing is, and the obvious thing, is if you don't want somebody to know something about you, don't put it online. And if you follow that rule, I don't have the same confidentiality issues as, you know, therapists and healing professionals do, because I'm working with therapists and I no longer have a private psychotherapy practice. I mean, I certainly don't reveal my clients' identities without, you know, their permission or acknowledgement, but I don't have the same ethical concerns. So what I do, which is, I have used my personal profile on Facebook to friend, other people in my network who are therapists, et cetera. But what I do is I use a feature in Facebook called Lists. Now, I think probably for most of you, it's probably best that if you do what Susan suggested and set up a separate page for your business and for your practice, and then if you're using Facebook personally, keep that, you know, make sure all your privacy settings are set for private. And they're complicated, but, you know, if you can go in there and you can look at them, and, of course, we'll be talking about this more on our course that starts on January 11th as well. But basically, you can set up lists even under your profile, and you can keep certain lists public and private. And you can choose who sees what lists. So that's something to take into consideration. I think that, you know, if you're using social media like I do, only for primarily professional reasons, even though I do use the lists and Facebook, I'm not really that interested in using Facebook or any of these things for that many personal. I mean, I do sometimes post personal information, but it's stuff that I don't feel that is going to harm my reputation or reveal too much information about me. Or sometimes I post just things that interest me that I think might interest other people that are kind of off topic, you know, off marketing topic. So if you're going to do that, I think you just have to remember, if you're going to use it as a marketing tool or a practice building tool, you have to realize that, you know, you've got to put yourself out there. You don't have to put private information out there, but you do want to be seen. I mean, part of building a practice is being seen, and getting, you know, exposing people, as many people as possible, to who you are and what you do and the value you provide. Susan, do you have anything else you want to say about privacy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, privacy for me means I don't put anything out there I wouldn't want broadcast on, like, the Huffington Post. I don't put any pictures of my family on any social media. I use social media primarily for my business and growing my practice. There are loopholes. I mean, Facebook has made mistakes with privacy, and they will continue because they're growing so fast. They can't think of, you know, every little glitch that might be in the system. So really, you're safest by just limiting what you put out there and knowing that everything you put out there can be seen. So will I tweet something about my son being homesick today because he has strep throat? Yes, because it doesn't matter. I mean, nobody knows his name, and nobody knows what he looks like, and nobody knows where we really live. So I've kept that all private. And like I said, you have full control over your social media presence, and it it's just being mindful about what you're putting out into the public forum and, you know, coming to terms with there's boundaries around that you determine.
Yeah, and I think there's this one thing that I really suggest people do is on Facebook you have the option of revealing or showing in your column your birth date. And I would strongly advise anyone, whether you're in business or not, to do that. Because even you can choose whether you do the day, month, and the year. Now, you see a lot of people don't have the year there, but they have their day and month. And I just think, why would you do that? I mean, yes, people on your friends can say happy birthday to you. But, I mean, if they have your month and day, I mean, if somebody has your month and day, it's not going to be that difficult to figure out your year. And our birth date is, you know, used on all kinds of confidential and private information. So I don't put that out there at all. And I would strongly recommend that people don't. I think that's just something that, it kind of surprises me that so many people are willing to put that out there, for sure. Oh, the other thing that I've seen people mention is when they get tagged in photos. And again, those of you that don't know what we're speaking about, just bear with us because there are a lot of things about Facebook. It's really when somebody posts a photo of you and it ends up on your wall. There are settings to prevent others from doing that as well. So, you know, there's things, again, like Susan said, that there's ways that you can control it for sure.
Right. Yeah, you own your privacy. I mean, you can do that, and ultimately you own what you decide to put out there. And I mean, the one thing about social media that I've found is that if you're thoughtful and planful about it, it's an amazingly powerful tool. It doesn't have to be scary or overwhelming. Juliet, should we say a little bit about our course, because I know that some people may have to jump off the call early.
Sure. Do you want to go ahead and do that?
Sure. So I know Juliet and I have both mentioned this briefly, but we talked, I think this was way back in September, right, Juliet? We connected, and we both realized we had a really similar interest in helping therapists to learn to use social media in a really powerful, effective, ethical way. And so we put together this 6-week teleseminar, and really it's for people that are curious about using social media as a business building tool, or for people that are starting to use it and maybe feeling a little overwhelmed or not getting the return that you had hoped you would, and you're not really seeing the benefit in it. And what we're going to help you do through 6 weeks is to learn how to use the online space, both social media and your website and blog, to essentially attract more ideal clients and to do all of this in a really ethical, effective, efficient way. And so it's going to start after the new year. Our first class will be on January 11th, 2011, and it's going to go for 6 consecutive weeks into February. So if you want more information about that, you can see it at socialmediaforththerapists.com.
We have an early bird deadline of $159 if you sign up by midnight Pacific time on Sunday, and after that the price is going up. So if you want to get in on the early bird price, you want to do that before Sunday. One thing I just want to say, that I know Susan and I have branded all this course as Social Media for Therapists, and we've been talking a lot about therapists. I know that there's people on the line that aren't therapists or psychotherapists, and, you know, rest assured, all this information does apply to you, both in today's call and also what we're going to be doing in the 6-week course. So if we don't always say that it's for you, please know that you are included in this. And I know that I have lots of people from my lists and people who know me over time that are not therapists. So I just wanted to make sure that you know that you're also welcome here.
Right. Thank you.
So, okay. So, Susan, do you want to talk about time management a little bit?
Yes. Yeah, this is a big one that I hear a lot of, not just therapists, but also physicians and other, you know, health professionals talk about time and how social media seems to take up a lot of time. And again, really, the amount of time you use with it really depends on you. You know, certainly you don't have to spend hours a day on end in the social media space, and oftentimes that's really not the most effective use of it or your time. But so the way that I've worked out my time management is this. I typically use, I use a blog to market my practice, and I consider blogging as part of social media. And I typically write one or two articles a week, and those can be short little top 10 lists or, you know, five things to think about this week posts, and those are often less than 200 words. Or they could be longer, but it doesn't. That might take me an hour a week to do that. And then I use the rest of my social media time to build relationships and make people aware of what's going on my website. And so on a day where I'm full with clients and seeing people, I might spend 15 minutes in the morning using my social media, which is typically Twitter and Facebook, and then maybe 15 minutes in the mid-afternoon to do the same thing. So ultimately, it might be an hour total to do my writing and then a half an hour each day to keep up with the social media, letting people know what I'm up to, and also having like short, quick little conversations or comments with people to kind of maintain those relationships. And that's about it. And there are days that I don't use social media at all. I typically do not go into the social media space on weekends because I protect my free time, and as well as the fact that most of the people that are reading my social media information are not there either. So you can certainly put up boundaries around when you're in social media and when you're not. You know, people have talked about, well, you know, I start and I get sucked in, I lose track of time, which is true because we're social beings. I mean, we like to be social, so it can be actually quite rewarding to have conversations all with people all over the world about topics that really interest you, and that can take some time, and there's nothing wrong with that. I often tell people when they're just starting out to carve out an hour a day, write it in your planner, write it in your schedule, let yourself explore, take the time to actually do it. Give yourself permission to learn and take the time to do that. You know, if you're someone that really does lose complete track of time, set a timer, set an alarm, either on your laptop, computer, your cell phone, or even an old-fashioned egg timer. Set it for the amount of time that you want to be sitting on social media, and when the bell goes off, you just disengage. So there are ways to make the time work so that you're not feeling like social media is a full-time job.
Well, and I think the thing is you have to realize that a little bit of effort, like you heard Susan talk about how she uses it, a little bit of effort can really make a huge difference in terms of your business or practice in the long term. It doesn't happen right away. I think you need to have a strategy as well. Like if you're just on there aimlessly and you don't quite know what you're doing, you know, you're going to feel like it's a waste of time. And if you don't start seeing results, you're going to feel that way. But, you know, I've been rethinking this whole issue again about therapists, you know, not seeing themselves as business people and not realizing that they have to spend time to build their business. So whether it's social media or speaking and networking in the community or, you know, writing a newsletter, whatever, everything does take time. It's just a matter of having a strategy and a focus, and I still think too many therapists don't do that with any of their marketing. Even though they hear it, they don't actually put it in place. So you have to realize that things do take time, and even when your practice is full, and I know there are people on this call who fit into this, that your practice is full and what you're doing now works, it doesn't mean that it's always going to work, and you can never rely on just one way of marketing your practice. I think that that's always risky. So you really need to, you know, find a focus. And if you're using social media, I know about this point on the call, a lot of you are maybe even more overwhelmed than you were when you came.
Right.
But I think the thing is to realize that it's like a step-by-step thing. And that's one of the things we want to do in the course that we're doing on January 11th, starting on January 11th, is really kind of walk you through the steps, get a plan in place, get a strategy in place, so that you're using it in a really productive and efficient manner, and not just, you know, doing it aimlessly.
Right. Yeah. It, like you said, Julia, any marketing has to be planful. And so this social media is actually a really neat way to sort of brand yourself online and, you know, attract the clients that you're looking to work with who are looking to work with you. So it's win-win in a lot of ways, because by using social media and educating people about yourself and the work that you do, you are, in effect, helping them. You're reaching out to them and giving them information that they might not otherwise have access to, but because of the beauty of the World Wide Web now, we can literally reach people around the world. And people have said to me, well, why would I want to be reaching people, you know, across the country or the world if I have a practice in Boston, Massachusetts? Well, the truth of the matter is people know people. So I've had referrals from folks who they follow me in social media, and they may live in Florida, but they have a sister or an aunt or cousin who lives in Massachusetts. And so these folks that have called me said, my sister in Florida told me about you, and I had no idea that you were right here in my hometown. So like I said, like Julia and I are saying, it's all about building relationships, and social media makes that a very efficient and low-cost way to do that. And so much of this can be done from your office and your home that you don't have to be out and about doing a lot. Although I think you should network with people in your community, you don't have to be doing it constantly. You can do both. And the social media allows you to do that daily without needing to be out of your office or not seeing clients.
I was just going to add, Susan, you were saying about, you know, the example of somebody on the other side of the world can refer someone to you in your local area. There's a lot more therapists using phone therapy and online therapy as well, so that does open you up to an international audience. And there's more and more therapists that are realizing that they want to become more entrepreneur-like and not just build a practice, but, you know, sell products or do courses or do teleseminars like Susan and I are doing, and that kind of opens you up, you know, to a whole other market as well.
Absolutely.
So should we take a few questions? I guess, you know, maybe I'll just say in summary is that, you know, even if you just set up your accounts and spend a few minutes a day getting things going, even if it's not going to be your main strategy now, you'll kind of learn it slowly, step by step, as you have time to do it, and then, you know, you won't feel even more overwhelmed 6 months or a year down the road and feel like you're missing the boat. I think once you just get started, you'll feel a lot better.
Right, and I always say to people, you can't break Twitter. You can't break, Twitter and Facebook. You know, they're free to start, so get an account and spend some time, go follow people. You could follow myself. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Susan Giurleo, SusanGiurleo. And Juliet, what are you on Twitter?
Juliet Austin. So what you do is you go to twitter.com and then you go Susan, Giurleo, Susan?
Giurleo.
Sorry. And then, or twitter.com, Juliet Austin. And then on Facebook, Susan, are you at, where are you there?
I'm facebook.com/bizsavvytherapist.
And I'm facebook.com/Juliet Austin Coaching and Copywriting. That's my page.
Right. Right. So go, you know, if you want to get started, go on in, follow us, like our pages if you want, and go start to listen in on conversations, see what people are saying, see how people are using it. I think I spent a lot of time doing what we call lurking, which is just silently looking at what people were doing, observing. I learned by observing. So I went in and learned about how people interacted in these spaces before I even started saying anything. I didn't post anything of my own until I had a good sense of how other people used it, and that's fine too. There's real value in listening to conversations and seeing how people are using it, and then jumping in and making your voice heard when you're ready.
And I think the thing to really keep in mind that social media is a social space to build relationships and to get known and to share information. And if you're going to be directly marketing your practice or your services or whatever it is that you're selling, you need to, you know, follow the etiquette of how to do that. And we're going to be talking about that again more in our course, because I think sometimes people think that it's just about going out there and saying, oh, here's my services, call me, which
right.
is really not what it's about. It's a long-term strategy. It's about building relationships, getting known, setting yourself up as an expert, and establishing your credibility, and then you'll find that people will naturally come to you. You know, I was saying to Susan, I built my practice through speaking and my newsletter, and then I started using a social media, and then I started blogging several years ago, and then I've been using Twitter and Facebook for a few years now, and I just noticed that it's just kind of exploded my exposure, because there's people on, you know, Twitter and Facebook that I can now interact with that maybe have been on my newsletter, or they're referring other people to me. I just noticed there's a whole wider sphere of people that I can now relate to in ways that I couldn't before.
Well, it's so, social media makes it so easy. Like, it's so easy to share. It's so easy to spread the word, you know. And, you know, it's sort of what people talk about viral, something going viral. When something goes viral, it means it's shared among many, many, many more people than you could ever reach alone. Mm-hmm. And so that's the beauty of social media, is that when we put out valuable, useful, helpful information into the online world, it benefits a lot more people than we could ever reach alone. And as you build that reputation of being a helper, of being an expert, of having valuable information, the more people are attracted to you and what you do and are ready and willing to engage with you on as a professional and to work with you as well.
Susan, should we take a few questions? Or?
Sure. We have time for some questions. So if you want to ask a question, we're using a new bridge line today, so let me see here. If you want to ask a question, you can press 5-star on your phone, and I will be able to see you, hopefully, on my screen here, and then I will. You can talk to us. So let me see. I see one question here, so let me see. Hello? Hello, can you hear us? Oh, hold on. Maybe not. Oh, hold on. Let me click on this. I apologize. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Susan and Juliet. This is Candace from Vancouver.
Hi, Candace.
Hi, Candace.
While you guys were talking, I signed up for your course, but what happened after I filled out everything and put in my credit information, and submitted it, is it went back to the original page, Social Media for Therapists, Engage or Be Left Behind, that page. So I didn't get any confirmation that I signed up. I haven't received an email saying, you know, that my information has gone through and I don't have a receipt. So I'm wondering about that.
So,
okay,
Susan, we'll just check into that right after the call, right?
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yep.
Yeah. Thanks for letting us know, Candace.
If anybody else is having that problem, I thought I'd let you know.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
We will take care of it as soon as we're done today.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And thanks for signing up, Candace. You're a keener.
Yes, thank you very much.
Candace is amazing. She's done amazing things over the years, so it's great that she's signing up.
Good. All right, we've got a lot of questions here. So if you're calling about registering, if you're raising your hand for that, we've got that covered, and we will take care of that ASAP as soon as we're off the phone. But let's see here. Another caller. Hello?
They can go ahead and register because you're getting a record of that anyway.
Absolutely.
Right?
And
so go ahead and register and just know that we'll be sending you information soon.
Yep. I don't have people's last names here, names. So I'm unmuting you, but I'm not sure if you can hear me. The last two numbers of your phone number are 93, whoever you are.
Yeah,
hello.
It's Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, I'm in Cambridge, Massachusetts. My question is that one of the barriers that sometimes is inhibiting me about being out there on Facebook or even Twitter is the idea that somehow I have to make what I present physically attractive using some kind of formatting or HTML or something. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, because that's just one of the obstacles that I see not being experienced in doing that.
That's a good question. When I first started doing my marketing through email, I did have things that looked pretty with HTML. What I'm finding more is that people are using their mobile devices, so their phones, their mobile phones, and typically the HTML actually gums that up. So a lot more people now are using text-based information. If you're going to have a website or a blog, you should have some design there so it looks coherent and attractive. Twitter and Facebook will give you choices around backgrounds. You don't have to fancy those up. I haven't. I don't know, Julia, if you have.
Yeah, I have. I have a welcome page on my Juliet Austin Coaching and Copyright Writing Facebook page, the landing page that I've done, and I do have a customized background on Twitter. There are, you know, you can get, there's free ones out there, if that's what you're talking about, Jim, and there's other people that custom design them, sometimes for a low cost. So those are all options. But I wouldn't worry about that when you're getting started. Just get started. Those things can be added later. I think, you know, it's nice to have a brand and have your website and everything kind of match. But you can get that happening step by step. Is that what you're talking about, though, Jim? I was wondering if
yes,
you were talking
about.
Yes,
I am, actually, yes.
Okay. So, you know, get started. And then, you know, there's we'll be talking about resources and stuff and the course. For, you know, getting those backgrounds, we can list some of those there. But there are free ones to get you going. I guess the other thing I wanted to mention, for those of you that are overwhelmed about even setting up an account, Susan and I are going to be doing some videos showing you how to do that, and we'll be posting them for people that sign up for the course. So we'll be helping you even, you know, we're kind of trying to help people that are at all levels here make these platforms effective. Do you have another question there, Susan?
Sure. Let's see. Hello? Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hi.
This is June. Can you hear me?
Yes, June.
Okay, thank you. Yes, thank you. My question is writing a blog, and to a lesser degree, some of the comments that I post and so forth. Do you always use your own information in a blog, or do you sometimes refer to articles written by somebody else? It gets hard sometimes to quickly come up with my own information. I get where I feel I'm going to be repeating the same thing over and over. Do you use other people's information or articles sometimes?
Yes, you can do that. There's something called ezinearticles.com where people upload articles that they would be very happy for you to publish on your blog as long as you give them credit. You can also do I've done things such as book reviews, summarized research, and again, those things can be short and quick. So if you've read a book about your specific area of practice and you want to just let the public know your impressions of the book, that's a perfect blog post. But you can also borrow other people's content, which is fine as long as you always give them credit and a link back to their particular blog or article.
And sometimes if it doesn't, sorry, Susan.
Go ahead.
Oh, if it doesn't, like ezine articles, it usually says that you can publish with the you know, giving them credit. But if it doesn't say that, then you need to write to the person and ask them permission.
Okay. Now, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, let's see. How many more questions do we want to take, Juliet? We have lots.
I don't know, a couple more maybe?
Okay. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is June again. I just had...
Sorry about that. Let's see who else. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, it's Roman Buchok from Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Hello.
I was just wondering if, you know what, on second thought, I have no question for you. Thank you so much.
Oh, okay.
That was easy.
That was easy. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is Janice from Vancouver.
Hi, Janice.
Hi. I have a question. I do have a website, but I'm thinking of redoing it, and I did hear when I first made mine, and I didn't follow that advice. Is it wiser to put your name in it, in the name of your website, than to have a general name?
I'll let you do this one, Juliet. This is your area.
Okay. Well, there's different views on that. If you already have a website up and you already have it hosted at a domain, I would strongly recommend against changing that, because part of what factors in search engine ranking is the age of your domain and your site. If you wanted to change it to a business name, you could start using a different URL and then redirect it to the main domain. It's not a matter of one better than the other. It depends on how you want to brand yourself and be seen. I think that you're going to be remembered unless you have a big practice with lots of associates or are really doing business things. Most people are going to remember you by your name. If you haven't done a website yet, sometimes having keywords in the domain name can help you in search engine rankings. So it really, really depends. But I would strongly advise against changing it other than putting a redirect on it if you already have a site up.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. And should we take one more, Juliet?
Sure.
Okay. See if this one works. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Roberta Moore from Asheville, North Carolina, and I have a really easy question. I was looking at socialmediafortherapists.com in your class, and one, it doesn't say on there, but I bet you do this. If you miss a class, can you get it through download?
Yes, there will be audio. Sorry, we should add that to the page. All the classes will be audio recorded, and you will be able to get the recordings if you have to miss a class.
Excellent. Thank you. That was it.
Oh,
thank you for letting us know.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Okay.
Well, Juliet, we are about at 1 o'clock, so thanks
or
so
10
much.
O'clock. 1 o'clock?
10 o'clock.
And then 11 o'clock.
This
well,
is the joy
you.
Of bi-coast, bi-coastal.
That's
work.
Right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. I enjoyed this a lot, and it was great to do this with you, Susan. And if you want to get that early bird deadline, you have till Sunday to sign up. It's $159 or $199 after that, and the course starts on January 11th, the same time as today's call. And happy social media marketing to everyone.
Thanks, Juliet, and thank everyone for being on the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.